Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. The first Marquette Law School poll measuring David Crowley against Tom Tiffany is out. And criminal charges will not be brought against Elon Musk over his involvement in the 2025 Supreme Court election. Plus, Facebook's parent company Meta will pay hundreds of millions in settlement money to Wisconsin. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for August 28th.
I'm Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Welcome to Rewind. We had a slower week than we've had for the last couple of weeks, although we are taping this on a Thursday afternoon, so maybe I just jinxed everyone's Fridays. But we will start with the Marquette Law School poll that came out this week. This is their first poll since the primaries, and then it's their first time ever matching up David Crowley and Tom Tiffany, because David Crowley was not in the race when they last did their kind of potential Democrats against Tom Tiffany. And so what it found is a slight edge for David Crowley among likely voters, a basic complete tie among all voters. What were some of your takeaways? How seriously should the Crowley campaign be taking that?
So it's an August poll for a November race. So I've seen some people try to like say, oh, the Marquette poll in August, it doesn't really do a good job of predicting what's going to happen in November. Well, no duh. It's a snapshot in time. At the snapshot time is right after the primary that David Crowley won with lots of attention. So on the one hand, the Crowley people feel pretty good because with likely voters, who we probably want to focus on more right now here at close election, he's up by 5 points, which is just outside one of the margin. So margin error is plus or minus four. So pulling geek that I am, if it's 8 points, it's a true lead. 5 points is a small lead, a slight lead. Inside of four is basically even. So very back home. So they feel good they're up a little bit. For Tiffany to go, hey, there wasn't that much of a bump. The environment's not really good for Republicans right now, and I'm basically right there with registered voters. So for me, there's an opportunity to grow my share of the pie if I get people more voted turnout on my side of the aisle.
And there was, you know, some good news for Democrats in there, which is that even though Democratic enthusiasm is down, in part because of so many Democratic voters who wanted Hong to win, there was still an indication that they will vote for Crowley anyways. And the other thing that they measured is that the Democratic Party is pretty unpopular, led primarily by Democrats who are mad at the Democratic Party, and they will still vote. So they are less enthusiastic about voting than Republicans, but that doesn't seem so far to be translating into any desire to not cast a ballot.
Charles Franklin found that 98% of people who are favorable to Hong, I had a positive view of her, are going to vote for Crowley of this sample. And that's like a very small band of the sample, so huge margin of error. But those folks are going to vote for him. They just don't seem that excited about it right now. Is that because they were like, I'm not happy he won, or that Tony Evers interfered with the primary, or is there that data center issue? They're going, yeah, I'm going to vote for Crowley now, but if I get pounded on this data center issue for the next 2 months, I might go, not so much. So for Tom Tiffany, one of the paths here is, okay, he's leading right now in August with this likely voter sample, and he's not very well known. Like 20-plus points of people, 20% of people surveyed have an opinion of David Crowley. I have room to define David Crowley to tear him down and make him unappealing come November.
Well, and you pointed out that sort of that 98 to 91% discrepancy as a warning sign for Tom Tiffany, because he's had the field more or less to himself, and yet he only has sort of 91% of his party behind him, whereas Democrats are a little bit more unified, or actually quite a bit more unified, around Crowley. You also pointed to the Trump approval rating being quite low. Tiffany's quite aligned, obviously, with Donald Trump, and a number of Wisconsinites saying that they are not doing well right now, which often sort of translates to blaming the party that's in power in Washington.
So I've been saying, like, tell me what Trump's number is in October, how much gas costs. And I know it's overly simplistic sometimes, but it's very indicative of what's going on. Trump's at a second all-time low, 40% approval, 59% disapproval. Last time was 40-58. So the change disapproval is very marginal, but either way, he's minus 19 with voters. That's not a good place to be as an incumbent president in the White House. To Gas is still $3.80 a gallon. It's not going down anytime soon. I can see now there could be an agreement with Iran at any moment now that could change everything. We've heard that for months, right? But as long as it keeps going on, that is a daily reminder of costs. You look through this poll, left and right, there's number one issue, affordability. People don't think the economy is going very well. They're not better off than they were before. Like all this anxiety about what's going on. There are also some warning signs for David Crowley. Again, right off his primary, there wasn't a huge bump. We are Wisconsin. We are purple. So you're not up 10 points. You're up 5. After all this attention about this big win, you are seen as more moderate than what Tiffany was, which probably is a product of that primary where Hong was a clear liberal, and Crowley is liberal, but not as liberal as she is, so that kind of helps you a little bit with your image. But again, that unknown, that you're not very well known, that could be an opportunity for Tiffany. Now, Tiffany had spent $9 million in change by August 20th. They came out the poll came on the field and was still upside down with voters. That is not a great place to be. So his campaign knows, hey, our best path, if we can't flip that, is to make David Crowley unappealing. So you hear things like, don't Milwaukee our Green Bay or our Eau Claire or La Crosse. They're trying to tell people, Milwaukee's bad, it's a bad place with bad things happening, and if David Crowley's elected, he's going to bring that to you. Seen ads from the Restoration of America PAC, which is Dick Uihlein's group, the Milwaukee tax man. Everything I see on social media from Republicans is Crowley's going to raise costs. He's got the highest sales tax in Wisconsin, which is true. That was approved by the legislature to try and bail out Milwaukee County and Milwaukee City with their legacy pension problems. Costs are higher there. Milwaukee's bad. That's the message for Crowley. Milwaukee is bad. And if you like David Crowley, he'll make Wisconsin just as bad as Milwaukee.
Well, and speaking of some of those financial and sort of affordability concerns, this is obviously a really big week in sort of tariff policy renegotiation. And we saw this kind of interesting thing happen, which is Tom Tiffany break from Donald Trump, which does not happen very often. He is very, again, closely tied with Trump policies, a big supporter of Trump policies. But Donald Trump said that he has this deal that he's going to import foreign beef because beef is so expensive right now in a way that is very much worrying beef ranchers and those industries. And so Donald Trump, I guess not tweeted, he truth socialed that this is going to reduce prices for Americans and give time for the great American beef herd to grow again. Tom Tiffany broke from that. He said you shouldn't penalize our farmers here in Wisconsin by having beef that comes in from other countries. How significant is it that not just Tom Tiffany, but the ranching industry is a pretty sort of MAGA group of people. A number of other Republicans in other states, you know, beef producing states, are also really speaking out against Trump on this.
You know, Texas and Kansas, for example, maybe a little more of a kind of issue to really kind of worry about if you're a Republican, but it fits into this pattern we're seeing where the president is trying to find ways to knock down this myth of affordability by doing things that you could argue, what's that word that you keep using? Socialism? The government playing with the economy? I don't know. It just called me crazy. But anyway, they're doing things to stimulate the economy, trying to find a way to make people feel better. The idea is if you get this beef on the market by striking a deal with producers to like have it, well, we won't charge you tariffs, drop the price by a quarter, that people will see beef go down at the grocery store. I don't know how quickly this is going to work. I'm not an economist. I'm not sure how I haven't seen this before that I can remember. How quickly can you make people feel better about their grocery bill without alienating the farm industries going, hey, we're struggling as it is because I know beef is high, but part is because we have four major processors in this country and there's not capacity. Oh, by the way, we had you'd call it liquidating our herds years ago because we couldn't get them into producers fast enough. They killed a lot of cow kind of thing. There is a challenge there. I'm not sure it's going to fix it, but if you add in this, grocery prices, gas, and everything else, there's your affordability issue that the president is struggling with. Oh, by the way, two things Republicans have going for them this fall are candidate quality and money. Candidate quality is, yes, they have some clunkers out there, but the number of DSA candidates in swing seats for Democrats has got to be a worry because they're going, hey, this is a purple district and we've got somebody who's kind of left. Republicans also have a ton more money from the RNC down to the all the Republican committees have more money than their different counterparts. The president now has all this money in this MAGA PAC. He wants to spend it, I read nationally, on ads about his accomplishments. So imagine if you are a person in a state with where President Trump is not very popular, and the ads in October are about Trump and reminding people what he's done. Maybe it works in western Wisconsin and northern Wisconsin where it's more Trumpy, but if you run those in Milwaukee, is that going to help you suburban voters? I'm not sure that's going to be a successful path.
Well, and to your point about data centers as well, that's another area where Tiffany has started to kind of branch away from Donald Trump after supporting some of his pushes to expand data center development. And so if that also stays a very salient issue, and those types of ads about foreign beef, another kind of, I think, notable thing is that the White House won't disclose which countries the beef will be coming from. And of course, Tom Tiffany has made part of his platform about really trying to maintain farmland in Wisconsin for Americans rather than allowing foreign sort of entities to come in. So how do you kind of square that circle if then we're doing deals with maybe China, maybe other countries? Who's to say?
Excellent point.
We also got some surprising preliminary surplus numbers this week, that there is basically a lot more money coming into state coffers than expected, almost $451 million more in state revenue than was projected for the fiscal year. And so that seems to indicate that the state surplus is going to be $3 billion.
So in Wisconsin, with our process, we get these numbers from Department of Revenue, unaudited preliminary numbers. There will be a final accounting of the 25-26 fiscal year, which ended June 30th, in mid-October, when they have the annual fiscal report, which I read every year eagerly, that takes into account with a free drink, with the revenue numbers, expenditures, and Department of Revenue, so besides tax collections, other things. That'll give us a better picture of what's going on for that fiscal year. If this holds, we're talking more like $3 billion for a surplus for the next budget rather than $2.5 billion. Now, again, numbers will change a little bit depending on Department of Revenues, expenditures, but we're in pretty good shape. What I'm getting interested in watch now is how does this impact the campaigns? Because talking to Tom Tiffany, he says he's going to give it all back to taxpayers. David Crowley says he wants to use some of it for property tax relief, invest in schools and healthcare, that we're going to do things to kind of like lower the cost for people. There's money to play with. Mark Bourne, by the way, co-chair of the Finance Committee, said, hey, we tried this $1.8 billion surplus package back in May. It failed. If we can strike a deal, I'll come back and vote for something again. That's going to be a tough sell to come off campaign trail and do something. But man, would that be interesting to see like the governor, unhappy with Democrats, go for one last kick at the cat with a surplus package before he walks out the door? That'd be fascinating. To at least know, by the way, that May surplus package, we kind of had a hint things are going better because the Evers administration said, hey, we think we're about $300 million to $350 million more than we thought we're going to be in January. So in mid-May, they thought we'd be at best $350 million more than we thought we'd be in January. A month later, we find out they closed the books on June on the fiscal year, we're actually $450 million to the good. My question is, what's driving this? I asked Bob Lang, the Fiscal Bureau, is there any one thing the economy is driving? So no, you know, if you have good income tax collections, usually means good sales tax collections because people have money to buy stuff. There's no one thing driving this. So does these tariffs, does this, I don't say havoc in the economy, but this uncertainty economy, does it pull back at all to even things out at the end of June 30th, 2027? We close the books on this entire biennium.
And to your point about, you know, potentially striking some kind of deal, both sides can really leverage a big surplus as they run for election. So I can't see why they would sort of give up that bargaining chip when especially Democrats can say, like, all of these things that we've wanted and we haven't had the power to do, you put us in charge of the legislature and we have $3 billion to play with. And Republicans, sort of same argument, can say, look at the size of the tax cut that we could potentially give you. So I don't imagine that either side will kind of willingly give up that chip. But who's to say? Over in La Crosse County, the district attorney out there has declined to press charges against Elon Musk. This all dates back, obviously, to the 2025 Supreme Court election, where he showed up in Green Bay. He promised these million-dollar checks on social media. The first time he posted about it, he said it was for voters, which goes against the law about what you can and cannot give voters. Then he clarified that it was actually for participating in a rally and pledging to speak out against activist judges. The WEC referred this to a prosecutor, saying that it seemed to break election bribery laws. But this district attorney said, essentially, even if I wanted to, I don't think that I could possibly get a conviction out of this. Are you surprised by that outcome?
No, because one, the clarification that came, and remember too, Josh calls Attorney General before that March of 2025 rally in Green Bay, went to district court, the appellate court, and the state Supreme Court saying, you have to stop this. This is illegal. All three said, we're not stepping in here. So it seemed like it was a stretch. Now, the Elections Commission talked to Don Millis, the Republican chair, said, hey, our job is to find probable cause. There was probable cause. It's up to district attorney to see if you can get it, win a conviction. He said, you can't. I respect that. It was interesting, the statement from the DA was, if it were a different name and different amount attached, this wouldn't have been much of anything. We would have worked together trying to clarify things. But yeah, I mean, it's a high-profile case with Elon Musk. Of course, they're going to like get a lot of attention to it. But winning a conviction, that was probably not going to happen in a court in Wisconsin.
Yeah, one of the things that the DA said is that he does sort of believe in that curative approach. And so he said it was a case of a poorly worded statement and that it was corrected and brought into compliance with the law. Interestingly, he is a Democrat, and it was originally referred to Brown County. The Republican DA there stepped out because it was a conflict of interest. So this might be the last that we are hearing of that case for a while, although, again, never say never. Yeah. Elon Musk might return to Wisconsin, put on another cheese head sometime soon. Speaking of money coming into the state, Meta had this historic settlement this week, up to $18 billion that it will be shelling out to many different states, including between $219 million and $313 million here in Wisconsin. Attorney General Josh Call was on that suit, and so we have a little bit of video of him sort of announcing this settlement earlier this week.
As a result of this settlement, Wisconsin is set to receive $219 million, and we could receive up to $313 million if certain industry conditions are met. Now, the next step is determining where the funding is going to be directed. What I'm going to be doing is everything I can to put these funds toward keeping kids safe in Wisconsin. There's no doubt that this settlement is historic, but it's also my sincere hope that this is an inflection point where after these changes go into effect, and after today's settlement agreement has now been announced, other big tech firms and social media companies beyond Meta will hear our message that we are committed to getting accountability from social media companies that engage in conduct that harms our kids.
So largest settlement with an individual company since sort of the big tobacco settlements, but also in some ways for a company the size of Meta, a bit of a drop in the bucket. I think prosecutors were asking for hundreds of billions of dollars. This is $18 billion to be kind of spread out over 10 years. But as Josh Call was just alluding to, there will also be these kind of changes to the platform that are part of the settlement. So that's things like time limits, blocking these platforms at night and during school hours, turning off like some of the more addictive design features. This lawsuit, I should say, was about this idea that young people in particular with their particularly malleable brains are being willfully kind of hooked on these things. And among other things, Meta has now asked YouTube and TikTok to join them, sort of saying, like, these protections only work if we all do it, perhaps also saying, you know, to our competitors, like, you should maybe have to do some of the stuff that we have to. How significant do you think this is going to be?
Interesting because financial standpoint, there's been this fight between Josh Call and the legislature about what you have to do with settlement funds. Josh Call said on the call that they have sole discretion over this money, so the 200 plus million going to the state, he will direct where it's going to go. You lawmakers can't touch it. So just going to watch if there's any like scrap about that. But, you know, look, we've seen big settlements in the past. Ancient times, there was tobacco securitization or tobacco settlement back in the 90s, you mentioned. State actually, history lesson, securitized is the word they use, those funds where you sell your payments in the future up front for cash because we were in trouble financially. Different situation because this is a much smaller pot of money and it's under DOJ, not at the whims of the lawmakers and the governor. But interesting to watch if there's any fight over the money. And then two, does it change anything? And do they have a death scroll lock for adults? I'm kind of curious. I might need that.
I was going to say, I mean, like, maybe my brain isn't as elastic, but I also do doom scroll from time to time. I'm also interested, you know, to your point about sort of call controlling that money or the DOJ controlling settlement money now. A lot of what Democrats have asked for in past budgets, what Tony Evers has asked for, is kind of mental health services for young people. That is what Call says a lot of this money can go towards. And so does that, again, give Democrats potentially some leverage to say, like, now we have an additional pot of money for these mental health services that we've been asking for, and so then we can kind of look to the budget for other things. Again, just like lots of sort of money for whoever is in power after November to get to play with. Also this week, there were a series of decisions around mail-in voting. So President Donald Trump had this executive order that, among other things, ordered the United States Postal Service to make a list of who could receive ballots and only send ballots out to them, also dictates certain things about the design of ballots. And the Supreme Court this week didn't weigh in on that order itself, but they weighed in on a lawsuit that many states, including Wisconsin, filed, essentially saying you can't argue you've been harmed because the rule wasn't published. Well, the Postal Service published the rule, and so then all the states, or many of the states, refiled a lawsuit saying the rule's now been published, so now we can prove that we've been harmed. And so this is just very tied up in the courts, and might I add, 9.5 weeks out from the midterm elections.
Some of the harms they talked about were like having to rush to put new systems in place to comply with the rule. This is going to cause all kinds of extra work and all those kinds of things. Like, I'm not going to be surprised if we're like down to like the very end of the election before we know what's going to happen. I think the deadline to mail absentee ballots to those who have a request on file is in September. So 46 days out from the election, roughly. So there's a little bit of time to not panic about whether you're getting your ballot. But at some point, come late September, this could really start to affect people in Wisconsin if we don't comply with the rule. And there is an injunction to prevent it from being enforced.
Yeah, and the ballots have to be sent to military and overseas voters by late September. And so clerks are designing their ballots right now. So these are these kind of, again, nitty-gritty details that go into making elections happen.
And one of those details is, if you comply with the rule, you have to have a different ballot envelope, which you have to have ready to go when things go out in September. So that's one of the challenges for clerks.
Yeah, so this will be, I think, something that, and again, this is going to go through, I went back to a lower court, then there's like a separate injunction on a separate case, so there's going to be a lot of court action over the next couple of weeks. Also this week, Governor Evers requested a federal disaster declaration over this horrible tornado in July. This is the latest in a series of requests to the federal government for disaster funding. And one of the things that has been sort of ongoing is this idea, is the White House sort of politicizing emergency aid? So Politico did a report in March that found that Democrat-led states found it 3 times harder than Republican-led states to get federal money, though we have gotten some related to other weather disasters from earlier this year.
Yeah, I think there's still an appeal on file. The governor's filed over early denial, so we'll see what happens with this one.
Yeah, and it is one of these kind of situations, too, where these types of events, they're horrible in our backyards, and they are happening all over the country. And so it's always kind of a question of, like, how that kind of gets taken care of. No stocks for this week, no. And so that will do it for us here at Rewind. I am Uneven Wellington Dunk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
See you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.